From courtside the virtual hardwood, it's the NLSC podcast, episode number 357. Andrew with you once again. I am Andrew in the forum and Andrew NLSC on Twitter. My co-host is Derek. You know him in the forum as Deeper3 and Deeper384 on Twitter.
Oh, I'm happy to be here again and happy to have our special guest on, Andy Hull, one of the creators of Dunk Lords.
Absolutely, one of the creators of Dunk Lords. We have mentioned that on the podcast before, talked about playing it. Of course, you have played through the entire story mode, but we're going to dive and get the story behind the story, so to speak. Andy, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks so much. It's great to be here, and always fun to talk about the game.
Oh, great to have you on. We've got a lot of great, we feel, great questions to ask you, and some great questions from the community as well. Shout out to everybody, as always, for responding to the call. Some fans of the game, and a few fans of Spelunky, Andy.
Yeah, no, it's interesting, because so I initially got into game development, well, when I was very young, so I would say in high school, junior high even, I started kind of messing around with programming and using software called Click and Play, which was an old, like, kind of point-and-click scripting kind of language to make video games in. And I went to college for computer science and programming, and when I came out, I actually became a wooden toy designer for 5 years. And after doing that, I left and made an interactive children's book called What is Bothering Carl? And that got into the PAX 10 at the Penny Arcade Expo 1 year. So I was basically, they picked 10 kind of games to spotlight. And while I was there, I reconnected with Derek Yu, who was one of the guys who had been in that game community when I was younger also. We hung out there, and he had mentioned that he had made this freeware game called Spelunky and was basically looking for someone to help him kind of move it to Xbox, because Microsoft had contacted him about putting like an HD version out. And I was like, sure, I'll help. I kind of offered. I was like, hey, I know how to do programming on, like, you know, graphics programming and stuff. Like, let's give it a go. So that's kind of how I initially got into doing, like, professional game development.
That's a very interesting story. You know, wooden toys, that's not the path. You know, we've had guys on, we've had obviously other developers, Josh and Dave from Name a Gamer before, and similar interests in programming and everything, but I think you're the first that we've spoken to that got into wooden toys first.
Yeah, you know, it was one of those things where it was not the plan. I basically, in college, I had basically studied computer science and art, and I had been looking for a job at a game company or like a animation studio where I could do both. I wanted to do some programming and some art. But at that time when I graduated, this was like 2003, well, one, the job market was pretty bad, and two, there really wasn't spots at game studios for kind of hybrids, right? They just were like, oh, well, are you applying to be a programmer or are you applying to be an artist? And I was like, well, kind of both. Can I do both? And they were like, no, we don't really do that. And so I didn't really know what I was going to do, and I kind of saw this job posting as for a toy design job, and I was like, well, I do engineering type stuff and I can draw and paint, so I'll apply. But I had none of the prerequisites for the job, and they wrote me back and said, hey, you sound like an interesting dude, like, well, do you want to come work at the company for a day and see if you can do the job? And I was like, sure. So I drove out there and just worked a day at the company, and at the end of the day they were like, yeah, you seem like you're doing it, so we're gonna offer you a job. And that was that. And I was there for 5 years. Yeah, it was really great.
Yeah, like I say, a fantastic backstory for a computer game developer, of course. Derek, I believe you had some questions to lead off with, so I'll chuck the mic over to you.
Oh, absolutely. So Dunk Lords is a full court 2-on-2 beat 'em up style basketball game with a great story mode. It encourages co-op, whether it be through Steam Play or local, which I absolutely love. What was your main influences for that game? And at the same time, what maybe pitfalls did you run into You know, you had two developers for this game, which is just blows my mind considering the amount of detail, the 20 playable characters, you know, the 15 courts and whatnot. You know, what were the challenges of making a game with just two people?
Yeah, so I mean, I guess I kind of start kind of at the beginning of the project, which was originally there was a game jam online. And this happened kind of like while, so I had finished Spelunky for Xbox, but like contractually, like we were waiting to kind of put it out on PC. We had to wait like a year, I think it was. And so I had some time because it wasn't going to take a full year to do the port to Steam, especially since it was already running on PC during, you know, while we were developing it. And so there was a game jam for a sports game jam. And I had just messed around with this prototype called Buckets of Blood that I made. And the initial idea was actually NBA Jam crossed with Diablo. So it was going to be like a action RPG with like an overworld map, and you would kind of run into monsters or bad guys, and then instead of fighting traditionally, you would like play a short game of NBA Jam, basically. And there was going to be loot that dropped, and you would get equipment, and that would give you your abilities, and you would like level up until you could take on like the Dunk Lords, basically. And so I did not get super far on it during the game jam because I was like learning Unity at the same time. Like I had, Spelunky was C++, a 2D engine that I made myself. And so I was like, okay, well, I want to learn like 3D game development more. And I didn't want to write my own 3D engine because I'd done a little bit of that before. And I was like, no, I just want to try Unity. So I was learning the ropes with that. But I, you know, I was able to get a guy dribbling around and he could dunk and take jump shots. And I was like, oh, this is pretty fun. Like, I kind of like this idea, but then, you know, it kind of got put aside. And then after Spelunky finished, I was kind of prototyping ideas for games, and I kind of reopened the basketball project, Buckets of Blood, and I was like messing with it. And that's when I added like the uppercut. So I added just like another player that could just, you had to use controllers in the beginning. Like it was literally just like, one player would hold the other controller and try to uppercut you, and the other guy was trying to dunk. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. This is actually really fun. And I kind of, that was like the core of the game. I was like, if I can get people to play a basketball game where you can uppercut people, it's going to be great, because like even just doing that was really fun. And so that's when I started kind of developing Dunk Lords in earnest. And so for the first 3 years, so the game took like five and a half years, something like that, to finish. And for the first 3 years, I was working completely on my own. So I was doing all the art, all the programming, everything. And then as I got further along, it was becoming clear that like the art was becoming like a real bottleneck in terms of just like, I can't, like, this game's going to take 10 years if I don't get help, because it's just so much stuff that needs to be in the game. And especially with the animations, like I had learned to do 3D animating in Blender, but I wasn't very good at it. And so it would take me like a whole day to get like one short animation done. Like very short animation. And so I was like, oh boy. So I ended up, finding a guy, Dan Beeson, who came on board, he was an animator. He was, you know, he can model, he could do, texturing and stuff like that. And honestly, I mean, he's way better at that stuff than I am. And so he came on to kind of like finish all the art stuff and kind of take that over as I kind of like finished putting in all the code and all the characters in the story mode. I mean, there was still like a million things to do, right? And so, yeah, I mean, it was partway through development, though, that like, you know, it started to change from like NBA Jam meets Diablo to NBA Jam meets Street Fighter. And it became clear that like just making the basketball part of it was going to be like a ton of work without having to make like towns and maps and adventure land. And like, it was basically like already getting really huge and taking forever. So that's when it kind of got scaled back. And initially even the story mode that is in the game was going to be like still have towns and stuff. So you would go to like this hub world that we built out. I mean, it was working, and you could talk to people, and we had these, like, we had, like, a random player generator that would make the these characters we called scrubs, and you could just go up to them and be like, hey, you want to play me? And, like, if you won, you got money. You know what I mean? It was, like, this kind of, like, little economy, and there were shops. You could, like, the idea was it was going to be, you know, like a Diablo town almost that would branch off, and then you'd have these story moments where you played, like, the big games against the, like, characters from the actual roster. But even that was getting too big, and so then we kind of looked back towards fighting games again, and the story mode became more of, like, a Mortal Kombat-style story mode where it's just, like, a string of games connected by kind of cutscenes and a plot that kind of take you along and make sure you see, like, and learn everything in the game, kind of. Yeah, so that's kind of very kind of broad overview of kind of, like, how the game came about and, like, how it kind of evolved through its process. But, like, that's the, like, the shop in the game with all the items is also kind of a byproduct of the Diablo days of the game, right? Like, very early on, I had implemented this, like, equipment system so that we could have all this gear. And then when it became clear it was going to be kind of more just the arcade style, you know, the gear stayed in. And then it was like, how do we work that in?
No, it's very interesting.
I honestly, that is super neat, especially like trying to integrate like RPG elements and almost like side quests, which is what that almost sounds like. Like you have your main story and then you have like your side games that you can play. I will say a couple things. One, I'm glad that you went away from the name Buckets of Blood, because I think Dunk Lord sounds way better. I'm definitely a fan of the Dunk Lord's name. As far as the story mode goes, though, at some point, you know, you have 20 playable characters. I found that to be a lot. At some point, were you like, you know, we should cap this at 10 or 15, or were you like, were you set on 20, or did you just, because I know that you, I read your post that your daughter actually helped with a hidden character, like create a hidden character, and I wanted to ask you about that as well, but.
Oh, yeah, so I mean, the thing is like, I mean, I thought about limiting the roster to 10 characters once there was like 20 characters, or once there was like 16. I think, I kind of felt like, so I had seen games like, a lot, like other indie games that had done like characters and fighting game styles, and, you know, sometimes they would just have like 8 characters and 6 characters, and I remember feeling like, wow, that really doesn't give the same feeling as like when you have like a whole bunch of characters to try out, because I do have fond memories of playing like fighting games growing up and kind of exploring all the different characters, being like, oh, I'm going to try this guy now. I'm going to try this guy. And it felt like if there was only a couple that it wouldn't feel big enough, which I don't necessarily think is true, but I definitely thought that while I was making the game. And I kind of underestimated, with the whole project, but with the characters especially, like how much work it was going to be to get them in and balance them and make all their moves unique and stuff like that. Because in the beginning, right, it goes pretty rapidly. I was just kind of firing through them, like, oh, I've got this great idea. Oh, I can do a move like this. And, you know, by the end, you're like, what? I mean, between all the equipment and all the character special abilities, at the end of the project, it was a lot more like, oh, boy, like, what else can I do, right? Like, where is their empty design space? Because I did not want to have items that kind of overlapped in function or moves that did kind of the same thing with different graphics. I was trying to really make everything do something different in the game. And so that possibility space rapidly closed in as I was making more characters. And 16 was actually going to be the final number in the game. And when you buy the game, like that's what's on the character select when you play. And then in the creation of the story mode, it ended up like, oh, I'm going to need to make some extra characters just to make the story work. So there were 3 more characters from that. And a boss character who is not actually playable. And then I was at, 19 characters. And I was like, well, that's not a good number to stop at. Like, you can't release a game with 19 characters. And that's when I asked my daughter. I was like, "Hey, you want to make it the last character? Because like we need one more, and it's not part of the story. It's just gonna be just a bonus." I was like, "Do whatever you want." And so she came up with that heart character.
She must have loved doing that.
You know, she did, but it was funny because she was so. She took it very seriously, and she also was very upset that we had. I don't know if you saw the sketch. So her original sketch of the character was just kind of like a floating heart wearing a crown, kind of dribbling a basketball. And unfortunately, due to the way the game works, like we had to give the character a body because all the characters in the game kind of share the same set of animations, so they have to work off the same kind of character rig. And so it wasn't possible to have a character that just didn't have a body. And so we kind of added that. And she was like, "Well, you added a body. Why did you do that?" So I think she likes the character, but she still feels like it didn't completely follow her original design intent.
First lesson of game design, is it not? You know, the wonderful ideas you have, but some of them you got to compromise on.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the thing. I mean, she wasn't mad or anything, but I was like, that's how, you know, just it needs to work like that for the game. Because, like, again, you can buy all that gear. Like, they have to be able to wear the gear. And, like, you know, all the dunk animations have to work. And if your hands are connected to the side of your head, that's not gonna happen.
I do have to say, you know, you mentioned NBA Jam, of course, is the perhaps the king of arcade basketball games. And in the 90s, there were a lot of imitators, Barkley Shut Up and Jam, Looney Tunes B-Ball, etc. A lot of games tried to emulate that style. Of course, there was also Street Hoop for Neo Geo. It's kind of cool, very cool, in fact, that you didn't just say, okay, I'm going to make an unlicensed NBA Jam, essentially, or an NBA Jam with fictional characters, that you were going to do something different, you know, the original Jam meets Diablo kind of idea, but then reworked it into this, where it's a bit close to Jam, but at the same time, then it has the fighting game elements and the power ups that you buy and kind of switch out, kind of have, almost have a loadout kind of thing. It's cool that she went in that way, so that it wasn't just another Jam clone; it was something else entirely.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing is it didn't feel worth making something that was just kind of doing the exact same thing, and I also have always felt about Jam, you know, that they could have gone crazier. And I think I've read that when they were developing it, like, they initially, Jam was going to be 2-on-2 and a lot less crazy, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's supposed to be a sim game, almost. 2-on-2 sim game, yeah.
Yeah, and the craziness of it was kind of something that they begrudgingly accepted was cool or something. And I was like, no, like, that's the, you know, like, that's the key aspect. And it also just felt like, you know, but they didn't go far enough, right? It felt like, oh, you stopped. Like, you have this cool structure. It's almost like you made this great prototype, and then you didn't keep doing stuff to it. Because it felt like, well, if you could do all this other stuff, like, why not do other crazy stuff? And I know, like, that some of the, I don't know if the arcade game ever had this. I know the home ports had, like, the, you know, they had hot spots and stuff and special modes where, like, you could get more points from shooting from certain places. So it's like they started to realize, like, hey, you could kind of put more gamey elements in here, like video gamey elements. But then it never went, like, they just never went crazy with it. And to me, like, it just felt like a really big hole, like, that no one had ever tried to do that with that style of game particularly. I mean, you saw, like, Mutant League Football and stuff like that that was playing in that space with football, but, like, I don't know if there ever was a... I mean, there were games, basketball games, where you could punch people or fight, but they never took it to that next level of craziness. So I kind of think that's what I felt like I was going to fill that hole.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at it, there's always been a space for, you know, an audience for that type of game. You know, I mentioned Arch Rivals before and whatnot, and, you know, that game was all about, you know, punching people, and basically that's how you got steals and whatnot, and that's how you interrupted dunks and whatnot. I did, however, have a question for you before I lose it. So about the soundtrack really quick. So Laura, I think it's Shigihara. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah.
She worked on Plants vs. Zombies, or Plants and Zombies, and then also, I think, Tower Defense, and I think she also made a game. My brother and I absolutely love the soundtrack, and we pull it up on YouTube sometimes and just play it randomly. How big of a deal was that for you to be able to get her on board and actually do some music for the game?
Well, I mean, it was huge to get Laura. I mean, so the funny thing is that while I was working on Spelunky, I went to the game developer conference with Derek Yu, the other guy who worked on Spelunky. Well, I mean, the creator. I was the other guy. We went to GDC, and Derek had known Laura from just, like, a previous GDC, I guess. I mean, they were already friends or acquaintances, probably more so. And I gave her my business card, but it was inside a Magic the Gathering deck box. Like, I was just carrying, like, my Magic the Gathering deck box around, and so I gave her my business card, and she was like, oh, you play Magic? And I was like, oh, yeah, do you? And so we actually, at that game developer conference, ended up finding some other people and playing Magic together and just became friends. And so we kind of were friends while I was working on Spelunky, and then she knew I was kind of starting this other project, and I just kind of asked her, I was like, do you want to do the songs for it? And she was like, sure, that sounds great. Like, I think she was excited to do music in a style that isn't really her normal kind of stuff that she does. Like, it kind of was like, oh, I'm going to get to do, like, kind of crazy hip-hop inspired, like, songs. And so she was like, yeah, this sounds like a fun thing to do. So it wasn't, it actually happened pretty, like, naturally, and then it was, you know, so it was just kind of like, oh, yeah, that'd be cool, and I was like, yeah, cool, let's do it. I mean, that was the negotiations.
I just think soundtracks are so important. I do.
Yeah, and I do, too, and I think some people are surprised by the fact that Dunklord's soundtrack is, like, so, like, I wanted it to sound kind of like a video game soundtrack, more so than just, like, doing kind of, like, a straight, like, hip-hop soundtrack or something like that. Because I know, like, a lot of the arcade basketball games, like, you know, they just, like, license, like, rap music or hip-hop music. And I felt like I wanted it to be a blend of kind of that, but also with kind of, like, this heavily influenced by, like, arcade games and old, like, retro games almost, and have more, like, melody stuff going on in it, really. So I think it came out great. I think people are definitely surprised by it, but I think it works great.
It is a lost art. It's a lost art in games, I think, in general, but especially sports games. As you say, a lot of them these days have gone to the licensed soundtracks, which a lot of us enjoy, and sometimes old heads like myself discover new music or new songs through that way, because, you know, we're not listening to the radio, we're just listening to the same things we listened to in high school. Well, I speak for myself anyway, but those were the great things about those games back in the day, is the soundtracks, as you know, as Eric has said many times in the show before, and it's a point that I agree with. They're part of our memories of those games as well, and, you know, bringing back that arcade sound, as you said, and that video game soundtrack is so important for the atmosphere.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, too, like, you know, you want it to just be something that you can re-listen to a lot, too, because you're playing the game. I mean, with game soundtracks, right, you hear the song so many times.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, video game music, like video, like, especially, like, kind of catchy, like, retro-y sounding stuff, it really kind of works well to, like, you know, have it playing over and over and over again, which is important, right? And I think is not necessarily something that, you know, like, licensed music always fits with, right? Like, there's a lot of songs that I like listening to, but I wouldn't want to have playing while I played a video game.
Yeah, you get sick of them after a while. It's but with that, it's that special video game sound that it sounds good looped, especially when the whole soundtrack loops a few times while you're playing it.
Yeah, exactly.
So we had a question from the community. As we said, quite a few fans of Spelunky, and this we have the mailbag section later on, but we thought we'd squeeze this one in as well. This is from Sticky Fingers. So Spelunky is his favorite game. Basically wants to know how, or one of his favorite games, I should say, how working on that game gave you experience that you were then able to put to use in Dunklords, as far as impacting it in the terms of experience, ideas, and gameplay, and so forth.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing that has been a kind of a through line of all the stuff I've done, including actually the toy design stuff, but directly to Spelunky, is like Spelunky has a lot of systems. So Spelunky is a roguelike platformer game, and all of the levels are randomly generated, and there's a bunch of different monsters and items and things that can all kind of show up and interact in interesting ways. And so having had to deal with that kind of exponential complexity in terms of what things can happen in the game, what situations can arise, was the biggest takeaway that was essentially kind of even harder to pull off in Dunklords, with all the special moves and equipment, and all the different kind of things that the characters can be doing, right? It all has to work together. And so making kind of general systems that all of these attacks and abilities can operate under so that they all kind of interact with each other correctly is probably the biggest thing that I kind of took from Spelunky and then tried to do kind of one-up myself with in Dunklords. And so, you know, things that people don't even necessarily notice or think about, like, kind of work in the game. So one of the characters, Orwell, can shoot a laser at people. That's one of his special moves. And another character, Wilbur, can make a giant bookcase come out of the floor and fall on the opponent. And actually, you can use the bookcase to block the laser, because the lasers will actually, like, you know, ray cast and see that there's a bookcase there and stop and hit that instead. Or there's a pair of gloves that you can buy that make it so whenever you uppercut an opponent, you get some extra money. And there's another character who's special. He has a pet monkey, and his special move is the monkey will run out and uppercut someone for you. But if you're wearing the gloves, you will actually get the money from the monkey doing the uppercut as well. So there's all these kind of little tricks and little interactions that all actually happen that kind of make it feel like really cool, I think.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
How important was it for you to have that skill gap and the differences between players? Because, you know, I look at somebody like, well, usually when I play, I use Marlin, the bear. And so it's like, to me, that's like the Shaq of the video game because he can't shoot. But he'll throw it down on you and he's powerful and whatnot. How important was it for you to make the characters all have their own individual skill sets?
I mean, it was like pretty primary. I mean, the thing is that it didn't. So when I first started the game, it was always the intention that the characters would have different stats. Originally, they were all going to use actually the same model for the body, and I was just going to swap the heads and the textures on the characters, and they were going to be wearing like basketball jerseys, so you wouldn't really necessarily notice that I was just switching the heads only and the textures. But even back then, like, they had gameplay differences. That was always like a big deal to me. And I did push it more as I went because I found that that was what was making the games really interesting, in the sense that you couldn't use the same strategy with every character. And one of the hardest parts was trying to figure out, like, you know, how much does height kind of make up for speed, right? Like, how tall do you have to be this slow and still function in the game? Or, like, if you're this fast, how short do you have to be so that it isn't totally busted, right? Or, like,
rank is... Right, because you have the difference between the bear, which is like he's like 7 feet tall or whatever he is, and then you have Frank, which is like really low to the ground. Exactly.
Yeah, and the thing is like I wanted people to be able to find, you know, if you want to run around and jack threes and like be tricky, I wanted that to be an option. And if you just wanted to like uppercut people and dunk the ball, like I wanted that to be an option. And like by having the characters vary really widely, it kind of allows for people to specialize like that. And I feel like the way the abilities work and the way that the game works emphasize those differences more than most basketball games. Yeah, it just feels more pronounced to me.
And I think you touched on a couple of important points earlier as well when you talk about balance. And you also talked about being able to pick different characters in games, like fighting games, for example, which you've obviously taken inspiration from. And you did look at, because of course there were a lot of Mortal Kombat clones as well back in the day, and Street Fighter clones and whatnot. And it was all about having the different special abilities, the reasons to pick different characters and to play with them. And just as the worst Jam clones were kind of very boring, pedestrian, and unbalanced, so too were the fighting games, where the characters were too similar, or there was no real reason except for cosmetic differences to pick different characters. So obviously very important to balance it out so that there are strengths and weaknesses to having, to choosing different characters, that no one's overpowered or underpowered, but also a reason to do it from a different feel standpoint, because there were so many games back in the day, the knockoff games, the clones, that they didn't have the balance and the abilities or reason, differentiation, to pick different characters. And so you go through all the characters, as I'm sure you could probably have some examples, as we all could, but you go through the different characters and it just wasn't really fun because they all kind of played the same.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, that's the thing is, like, I feel like if you... I mean, I think this is true with kind of game design and game development in general, is that, you know, when you first encounter a game, like, the visual differences are the things you notice first, but when you play a game for a long time, those differences almost completely disappear or cease to matter at all. And you're kind of left with only the gameplay part of the game. And I mean, I think that's why you still see, you know, even like people who are born, you know, well after the 90s that are, you know, going back and playing some of the 90s games or whatever, like old classic games still can hold up. And I think a big reason for that is that, like, when you spend a long enough time with a game, like, almost everything else falls away except for the gameplay. And so, you know, it was definitely, you know, that was the most critical part of Dunk Lords, for sure, that I wanted to get right, was making sure it was fun, there was different strategies, and that it would hold up to, like, multiple plays over time. Like, if you and your buddy play, like, you could try different things, try different characters, try different strategies, try buying different equipment, and, like, see what counters what, and kind of that's what keeps the game interesting over 100 hours, right? As opposed to, like, what makes it fun for the first 10 minutes.
It's funny because a lot of the sim games, there's only one that's currently released at the moment, which is NBA 2K, of course, which its online scene has become very homogenized, and not to go into too much detail because we've talked about it on so many shows in the past, but to succeed online in that game, you basically have to create, you know, the build, or one of the few builds that is found to be viable and powerful enough to use online. So there is definitely that value in having these preset characters with their strengths and weaknesses, and properly balanced, so that it doesn't, that not just all the players play the same, because that's kind of the way the online scene in 2K has become, and that's the sim game, obviously, but the arcade, you can take it in a much crazier direction, obviously, but it's so important to have. And again, you look at a game like Mortal Kombat, you know, bringing up the fighting games, that, of course, every character has its own meta there, and now that it's really got into that fighting game scene, the competitive fighting game scene, I should say, now with Mortal Kombat 11 in particular, but each character has those strengths and weaknesses and that style of play. Just so important to actually have, you know, that video game experience. So it's not just, okay, let's just create this character that some YouTuber has said and play with it.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, I suspect that if enough people play Dunk Lords regularly, that it would turn out that some of the characters are much better than others. Like, I am... I find it very hard to believe that I did my job that well.
Yeah,
so
really, my brother and I talk Slice. We talk about I use Slice. Usually I pair him with the bear, and he is pretty awesome. I just want to point that out. He is,
yeah.
His special abilities and whatnot.
Yeah, and he actually got worse before release. That's the crazy part. Like, his special attack where he pounds the ground and, like, the kind of this digital energy comes out, that move actually used to just go until it hit the edge of the court. I ended up, you know, changing it so it has, like, a distance. Like, you know, it stops after a certain distance now, too. Slice is the tough one because I wanted him to be easy to play well because he's the, you know, the main character of the story mode. But certainly, like, he's probably high up on the best character list. I'm not sure if he's the best for sure, but he might be. I mean, he's definitely one of the top, like, three characters for sure.
It's kind of like the Mario in Super Mario Kart or Mario Kart or whatever. It's kind of like the jack of all trades, jack of all stats, kind of that well-rounded character that maybe there's something that play it better in a certain way, but you kind of have that everyman character that everyone can kind of pick up and play with. The Liu Kang, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, he definitely fills that role of, like, generalist, and, like, he doesn't have any huge weaknesses. He's not the best in any category, but just the fact that he's pretty good at anything, like, you can make a three with him. There's characters that literally almost cannot make a three. And he also is really good at dunking. Like, he doesn't have the furthest out radius for triggering a dunk, but he's got almost the biggest, you know, he's got a big one. And his special moves are very useful. The thing is, he doesn't have very, like, corner case special moves. Like, his special moves are always just generally useful to do. Yeah, I mean, he's definitely really good. But in a way, it was intentional, right? Because I wanted him to be good because he's, like, the guy on the title screen. He's the guy in the story mode. Like, you don't want him... I kind of probably overcompensated, but I wanted him to be one of the better characters for sure.
I don't think he's too overpowering. I don't think he's too overpowering, if you want me to be honest. I do want to say something, though, really quick. So for listeners, it took my brother and I, we played the entire mode co-op story mode. I think it took us about 3 or 4 hours, I want to say, to beat it. But then there's like an elevated difficulty for if you want to do it again. And we haven't gone through it again yet. But one of the best things that you did with the game, in my opinion, is make first off, when you're playing co-op in the story mode, the person who's playing with you gets to use different characters throughout. And that's really cool. So it keeps things fresh. Second, you made you had these amazing design ideas where the court moves. You have lights off, lights on. You have ghosts for, like, enemies where they disappear and then reappear and whatnot. I just wanted to say that was awesome to me, as far as, like, what you did with that design, with those design ideas.
Yeah, you know what? I think it is one of the most memorable parts of the game, and all of that was done in, like, the last 6 months. So the thing that's crazy is that, you know, we did not know that COVID was coming. We did not know that everyone was going to be locked down when the game released. But I kind of knew that, so since there were only two of us, right, we couldn't really feasibly do online multiplayer. And so I was like, well, there's got to be, you know, the game started as a single-player game, really. And I was like, and there's got to be a single-player to play. But, like, really far along in development, like, there really wasn't the story mode. Like, it didn't really exist. And a lot of the last, I mean, almost the entirety of the final year of development ended up being kind of getting the story mode put together. And it was writing the story, like, figuring out what the games were going to be. And I knew from very early on, from, like, kind of, we put together kind of, like, you know, a string of a couple games with some cutscenes and just to see what it felt like. And it was really clear that, like, the games were going to have to get weird or, like, change or there's going to have to be stuff happening that was more interesting than just, like, another arcade game of Dunk Lords, or it just felt like an endless string of games. You know what I mean? Like, it kind of, you lost the meaning of it. And I think having those surprises and those change-ups as you go through the game it makes you want to keep playing the story because you're like, oh, I wonder what the next game does. I wonder what happens to the next level, right? Like, it keeps up some sort of surprise that keeps driving you through the plot.
Absolutely, and you know, you brought up the idea of arcade games taking things further and NBA Jam and whatnot. I am a big Jam fan, but you go back to those games and it's play through the ladder, defeat all the teams. It's fun, but it does get a bit repetitive, and that was always the problem with arcade games, even NBA Street as well. And Jam on Fire Edition, by the last game by EA Sports, did actually change things up a lot with the road trip, but being able to change it up with those different conditions and everything, I think, is so important. And we even see, you know, you talk about the story mode of Mortal Kombat, for example, where it's each chapter is about three or four fights with the one character. Being able to change it up with different, whether it's one-on-two, whether it's kind of a handicap match or things like that, it does freshen things up. Otherwise, it is basically just a bunch of cutscenes followed by the same gameplay over and over again. So being able to change it up is very important, in my view.
Yeah, I mean, I think the tough part was finding things that were fun. Like, I mean, it sounds, like, obvious, but, you know, I tried a lot of different kind of variations on the game, and most of them were bad. I mean, most of the time, right, because at that point, I had spent 4 years making the game work in arcade mode really well, right? And the AI knew how to play against humans really well with the regular rules, right? So it was like most of the time when I added something, it just made the game worse. So it was like, well, I don't really want people to just play worse versions of the game all the way through the story mode. So it was finding those things that were like fun and different and also that the AI could handle. Because a big problem was like, you know, there's lots of crazy things I could think of, but like the computer has to be able to play under these conditions too. So it had to be something that I could easily teach the AI about while also being interesting enough for the player to, like, not immediately solve the best way to deal with it. So that created quite, you know, that was it was actually pretty difficult to come up with the ones that are in the game, which I don't know if people would necessarily appreciate, right? Because it seems like, so there's one game where you have to play with a beach ball, and the beach ball doesn't fit through the hoop, so the only way to get score is to dunk it, because you can, like, shove it through the hoop. And even just, like, getting the physics working where that was fun was actually, like, really hard. And it doesn't use the standard ball physics, but it isn't just... it's not like I just made the ball bigger and lighter. Like, there's a lot of kind of hacks involved to make the ball behave in a way that is more fun, essentially.
It's one of those things that I think a lot of people, and I'll chuck it back over to you in a sec, Derek, that a lot of people don't think about with game design and the importance of obviously getting the physics and things to work like that, but also to come up with the specific ideas and level design is one of those, I think, unappreciated art forms in games, and there's always that debate, are video games art? And you look at the way designing the perfect level, it's not just, and I'm sure you've played games as we all have back in the 90s and whatever, you know, where the hell do I go platformers, where it's just not very well designed and it's kind of like you just explore the whole level until you finally find out what you have to do or where the exit is. A really good, you know, really perfectly designed level is an art form, and the same thing, but I guess coming up with all of those concepts of how to change up the game in a way that the AI can handle, and that's the other thing that we don't think of, those of us who are not game designers, to get that all to work and to get concepts that are going to be fun, but they're crazy, but they also work and they don't impede the gameplay. There's real art form to that, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think the one, and I don't want to spoil how the game ends, but the final level was something that was... we had a backup in case that didn't work. Let's just say that. Like, we had this kind of crazy idea. Actually, the artist, Dan, was the one that initially said, hey, wouldn't it be cool if this happened in the very end of the game? And I said, that would be cool. I have no idea if we can do that. and we were shipping in, like, 3 weeks or something. I mean, it was, like, that was, like, the last thing we were going to do. And I was like, give me, you know, I'm going to take a week. I'm going to see if I can get it to work. If I can't, we're just going to do this obviously going to work thing over here, right? And it turned out that the crazy idea was, it worked. It was totally possible, and it ended up being amazing. But that was, you know, one of those, like, things where you're like, this is good in my head, but will can it actually work? Like, and I didn't know without trying it. I honestly had no idea if it was going to work or not. I was like real 50-50 on it.
No, that's great. I love the story mode. My brother and I love the characters. However, we both were questioning who your influence was for Maurice. You know, did you have somebody in mind when you were creating that character? And because he's an old school guy, you know, and the way he looks, the beard and the hair on the sides and whatnot. Did you have an influence for him?
Yeah, I mean, a couple. So, I mean, you know, I think, so initially, and it's not like this in the final game, but initially he did have, like, so, well, I should back up a little bit. One of his special moves is actually to turn young again.
Yep.
And it basically boosts all his stats, and he becomes statistically the best character in the game while he has that move activated, but it's only for, you know, some amount of seconds. It's not super long. And so, I mean, originally he had a big afro, and he was definitely kind of like, oh, it's going to be like a beefier Dr. J type character, was kind of where it started. But the other influence, which is actually Hayachi Mishima from Tekken, is like this old guy fighter, and I kind of was like looking at him, and I remember really enjoying playing as him when I played Tekken 3. And I was like, that'd be cool to have, like, an older guy. And I think, you know, it made sense to me to have an older guy in the game just initially because it was, like, part of what I like about basketball, part of what I think is cool is, like, looking back in the history of it. And it seemed like, when the characters were put in the game, there was no story mode. Like, there was no story plans. And so one of the challenges that ended up occurring was, like, I had this crazy cast of characters, and I was like, okay, now I have to write a story that links these characters together in a way that makes some sort of sense. Because they weren't designed to be, like, the characters they are in the story, necessarily. It was more just, like, hey, it'd be cool if there was an old guy that was playing and then he could turn young. That would be a sick special ability. I mean, that was kind of the initial thing. And then it was like, okay, well, if he's old, what did he look like when he was young? And then it was like, okay, let's go look at older basketball players and see, like, what, you know, get inspired by, like, that older kind of style from then. And then, you know, and then there was ones where it was just like, you know, it'd be funny is if there's a strawberry that can dunk and yell strawberry jam when he dunks, right? Like, that was it. That was like how these characters came, like, I came up with them. It was just like, oh, it'd be cool to do a laser attack. Let's just put a robot in with a laser. Like, there was no plan initially. And so, you know, you take all these bits from everywhere and some of it from the gameplay itself where you're just like, I want this function in the game, right? And then you just kind of create the character that can best fit, check all those boxes, essentially, is kind of how it worked out. But yeah, so I know I kind of answered about multiple characters there, but I mean, so that's kind of, you know, how all of the characters in the game got created. Was just kind of like, here's some theme or some idea that would be cool as a character, and then, like, how can I turn that into a real character then, right?
Right, I think that makes sense, and I think that's a home run with him, too, as well, because we talked about this on one of the prior episodes. We talked about, you know, that whole feeling of, you know, how Mike Tyson came back recently and fought an exhibition. You know, we talk about that whole, like, turning back the clock type mindset. And to have an older guy in the game trying to, like, bring back his glory days, right? trying to be a Dunk Lord again and whatnot. I think that that is something that a lot of people kind of like can connect with. So I thought that was a really cool character.
Yeah, awesome. I mean, yeah, at one point too, you know, when I was throwing ideas around for the story, like one of the ideas was actually that kind of like the final boss of the game was kind of going to be like Father Time or something like that. And you had to like win back your youth. So, I mean, there was a lot of crazy stuff that kind of like came and went, but certainly like that kind of, you know, I mean, especially when I think about basketball, right? Like I grew up, my favorite player was Barkley. Like I grew up watching like Jordan and Ewing and Barkley, and like my dad went to Duke, so I was always watching all the Duke games, and I grew up watching like Leitner and Hurley and Grant Hill. And like the thing is that like when I think of basketball now, when I think of all my favorite players, I think of these old guys. Right? So well, that's part of it.
Yeah, just like, you know, grew up watching at the same time, and you know, games that those names resonate obviously with us. I'm a big Barkley guy, big Ewing guy, and we're both big Jordan guys. So no, definitely, that's what we think of too.
Yeah, to say those are the players we think of when we think basketball is that resonates with us very much. So Andy, yeah,
yeah, and I mean that's the thing is like, you know, because you had asked me like, oh, you know, before I came on, you were like, oh, do you still play like, you know, sim games and stuff? And it's like, I don't, but I did. You know, like it's like one of those things where like I used to be like really into basketball, and I was one of those guys. I actually loved playing when I was growing up, and I just never like grew tall enough to keep up. Essentially, I just wasn't super athletic, and so like while I had fun playing, like I could never keep playing as I got older. I played like rec ball in college, and I like played, you know, at the Y and stuff like that. But like I, you know, as far as like playing in high school, playing in college, like I couldn't make the team, right? But it was always the sport that I like kind of thought about the most, even if it wasn't the one I played the best or something like that.
I'm curious, what sim games did you play? So you've obviously, that's kind of died out for you. But, you know, coming up, you know, it sounds like you're around our age. What sim games did you play the most growing up?
So I spent a ton of time actually with Jordan vs. Bird for Nintendo. Like the one-on-one crazy game. Like my neighbor had.
Yeah, those were my first two as well, yeah.
And then, like, on the Genesis, I played, you know, a bunch of the NBA Live games. And in college, actually, I would meet up with a friend and we would play one of the it was like NBA Live, like 2000 or something. It was like one of those really old ones, but we would just play on his PC with these like janky controllers that he had. Like, so I never was like deep into it, but it was like I definitely owned, you know, like NBA Live for Genesis and stuff like that. And then, but I definitely didn't, like, it wasn't ever like my primary game, right? So I know, like the games that I was spending the most time with, like, if you, like, between, like, basketball games like Diablo or something, like, I played Diablo, like, way more, right? So basketball has always been something, like, I enjoy playing the games for little bits, but I definitely have never been, like, all in on sports games. And like same thing with Madden. Like I always had a Madden around, and I would play it occasionally with a friend. But like I wasn't like grinding it. I wasn't playing it all the time. And yeah, and so that was the thing. Is I think, honestly, like my most played sports game is, well, now it's Dunk Lords, because when you make a game, you end up playing it for like 8,000 hours. But before that was NBA Jam. I mean, pretty easily. And that, I think that was like partly because that was one of those sports games that was like so good that everybody played it. Even your friends that didn't like sports wanted to play NBA Jam.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so and it's funny too, because I remember being in school and there was this new kid that moved to town, and he was telling me in class, this is before, well, the arcade version was out, but the home versions weren't out yet. And he's telling me that his, like, uncle or something works for QVC, and they're going to sell NBA Jam on QVC, and he has an early copy. And if I want, because he was new to town, he was like, if you invite me over, I'll bring NBA Jam for Genesis and we can play. This is before it was out. And I was like, what? No. I was like, this is just, you know, this is like a story. But, like, he came through. He actually came, and it was like, I mean, it was not, like, well in advance, but I think it was, like, 2 weeks before the game actually came out. He came over, and he had a copy of NBA Jam for Genesis, and I got to play it early. And they actually did do, like, a QVC. There was, that it was, like, a legit thing. They sold NBA Jam on QVC when it first came out, which is insane. Like, it's just such a weird... it's just such a weird thing.
QVC was so big back then. QVC was such a big thing, I remember.
Yeah.
From the 90s.
But that's a really cool story, and it also reminds me, back in the day, you get information from magazines and whatnot, but there was so much word of mouth and rumors, and you never knew who to believe, you know, because everybody had an uncle that worked at Nintendo, right? That was the whole thing when people made up the stories. But to actually, you know, obviously he came through and actually did have that that early release copy, but you didn't always hear about home releases or that in-depth news that we get these days online.
Oh, for sure. I mean, and you know, it is, we talked about that a lot with Spelunky actually when we were making it, because it was like, you know, Spelunky has a lot of secrets, and it was kind of like, it's a real bummer that like everyone's gonna know like basically immediately what all the secrets are. I mean, it doesn't take long, right? Because if one person finds it, they're gonna tell everyone. Like, the playground is essentially the entire internet, so everyone will know him instantly.
YouTube walkthroughs, yeah.
Yeah, and on top of that, like, you could look into the game files, too, right? Like, it's not just, people play it and find it. It's like, no, people get a game and they, like, pull it apart and, like, look through the files. They're like, look at this piece of art. We haven't seen this in the regular game. Like, I bet it's hidden. So, I mean, I do miss that. But, I mean, at the same time, I feel like we're reaching this point now where there's so much information and so many games out that you can't possibly know everything about every game, even if you wanted to. So it's kind of gone from like there was no information to like, there's just the right amount of information, to now like there's so much out there that you're very likely not to be spoiled just because you won't have heard about it, right?
Yeah.
And I feel like that's the case with Dunklords, right? Like, you know, Dunklords has done okay, but it's not like a smash hit, and so like there's not tons of spoilers online for like what happens in the story mode or like how to find the secret characters. Like, all of this is still pretty much a black box because there just isn't, you know, there's no like fan site, there's no, you know what I mean? So like if you buy the game, like you're very likely gonna be experiencing all this stuff on your own, which is actually kind of nice, to be honest, although, you know, I wouldn't complain about selling more copies either.
Of course, it is available right now on Steam and Xbox One. But yeah, I mean, I think also people do like to... I mean, there's the big thing, you know, no spoilers and avoiding social media and whatnot. So I think a lot of people do respect respect privacy to an extent, or for at least themselves, they go out of their way to not go out of their way, so to speak, to be spoiled.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you definitely see people that are like, I'm just getting off Twitter. Like, if a big game's coming out, you know, I'm just going to get off Twitter. I'm not going to look because I just know somebody's going to post something I don't want to see. So, yeah, I'm less worried about that now that I'm older, because, like I was saying before about the gameplay thing, is like the games that I play a lot of now, or the things that I take out of games, are like the kind of the mechanics, the gameplay, and like, you know, some shocking character reveal. Like, it's cool if I get to see it on my own, I guess, but it's not like why I'm playing games at this point anymore, right? And so, you know, I would be more upset if someone like spoiled, you know, a game, like a little gameplay interaction that you're supposed to figure out on your own, obviously. But yeah, I mean, in terms of like story and characters and like, there's a hidden world, like, after you beat the game 6 times. Like, I honestly, like, at this point, I'm just kind of like, okay, that's fine.
I'll get there when I get there. I'll see when I see it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, as far as being on Xbox and you're on PC, obviously PC is still a little bit niche and whatnot, especially like in the basketball, like sim gaming space. I saw that on your, which I, by the way, I loved on your Twitter, you did like almost like a 7-day almost like testimonial about different things about the game, about Dunk Lords. And one of the things is that you said you wanted to be on Nintendo and that would be a dream. Is that, have you looked into that? And is that a harder process than getting on Xbox and PlayStation? And do you have plans on trying to move the game maybe to PlayStation and Nintendo?
I mean, nothing is announced yet, but certainly like I'm moving in the direction of getting it on Switch in the kind of immediate future. I have not taken steps towards getting it on PlayStation basically at all yet, but it certainly is possible, right? It's one of those things where, so I had done Spelunky on Xbox, on Xbox 360, and so was familiar with the process, and so it made a lot of sense to have Xbox be kind of the first console I did for Dunk Lords. And, you know, I do feel like Switch especially would be a good fit for the game, because of the Joy-Cons. You could just break them off and, like, you know, take your Switch to a restaurant, take the Joy-Cons out and play a quick game of Dunk Lords. I mean, the games only take like 10 minutes a piece, so it's like kind of a perfect game to kind of squeeze in. And, you know, there's always, growing up, you just play Nintendo, and it became this, like, kind of icon in everyone's head. So I think there is something that I'd be like, oh my goodness, it'd be so cool to be on a Nintendo system. So I am working towards that, but, and hopefully I can announce something soon-ish. I really don't know, actually. But as far as, like, how hard it is to get on them, I mean, they're all reasonably this, I mean, it's similar. It isn't like vastly more difficult these days, especially to like get on one platform or another. I mean, most of it comes down to like kind of the work involved to make it happen, right? Because it's getting it running on the other system, but it's also, you know, updating all the text in the game that refers to another system and the button graphics and the testing with the different, you know, controllers. And there's a lot. It's just a whole nother game that you're launching, and launching a game is a lot of work. So, and like I said, you know, it's just the two of us, and I was the only programmer, with the exception of at the very end of the project, I did bring on another programmer for 3 months or so to help kind of optimize things. But yeah, like with the Xbox version, I basically did that port kind of on my own. And so, you know, it takes time for one person to get it ready for another system.
No, absolutely. I do see the reviews on Steam and whatnot, and people definitely took to it. So, and I've definitely seen some good reviews on it. So congratulations on that.
Yeah, thanks. I think the biggest thing that I'm trying to do now with the game is just get the word out, because I feel like people that play the game really like the game, right? But, you know, we did not have a huge marketing push. We didn't have any sort of publishing budget. And so, I think the big hurdle now is getting the word out, so that people can find the game and hear about it. Stuff like this is awesome. So, like, thanks for inviting me on here, because honestly, like, I think there's a lot of people who would really enjoy the game that just don't even know it exists right now.
Yeah, I found it, just to let you know how I found it. It didn't show up under like a basketball search or anything. I was looking through at the time, I was looking through new releases, and I was just going down the list, and I saw Dunk Lords. I'm like, hey, I haven't seen this game before. And I looked at it and I was like, all right, so two-on-two full court beat 'em up style basketball, I'm in. So I bought it. And like I said, I think the game is easily best played co-op. And luckily my brother moved in with me a couple years ago, and we've really enjoyed the game. That's the only way we play it, is co-op. But yeah, that's how I ended up finding the game. Also, I just wanted to let you know, you're a fan of Jam. Andrew did interview Tim Kitzrow, the voice of NBA Jam, on one of the previous episodes of the NLSC podcast, so you might want to check that out.
Oh man, I definitely will. That would be super awesome.
It was a fantastic experience. Tim's a great interview, great guy. Please excuse my fanboying on the episode. I always have to give that that warning that if I sound like I'm fanboying, I am.
I would be too. It's fine. Yeah, it's funny. I was at PAX, one of the PAXs. I think it was PAX East, but I was showing off Dunk Lords at a booth. And a guy came by and was like taking a picture of the game with his phone or a video or something. And he was like, oh man, he's like, I'm friends with Mark Turmel. And he was like, I'm sending him a picture or video of this. Like, he's gonna get a kick out of this. Like, you know, I wonder if he's heard of this game already. And I was like, whoa, that's crazy. So, yeah, it's always crazy. I remember when we did Spelunky, we showed it at the IGF part of the GDC when we were in the Games Festival. And John Romero came up and was like playing Spelunky and talking to me.
Wow. Yeah, that's cool.
I was just like, oh man, this is just so bizarre to be like, you know, a kid playing Doom, reading, you know, modding Doom. I definitely was like modding Doom back in the day. And I was just like, and then to just many years later be like showing a game I worked on to John Romero was just like super mind-blowing. It's very strange how that can happen.
I feel that's, you've made it then when you know, when they become your peers, I think.
Yeah, but that peer is stretching it.
Well, we'll say it anyway. We're trying to hype up Dunk Lords here. Come on now.
Yeah. But, like, certainly it is neat to know that, like, you know, that you are just, like, kind of also a dude making stuff. Like, I mean, there is some truth to that, right? Like, obviously there's different levels of, like, success and, but just the fact that, you know, especially back in the day when they made Doom, like, I mean, they were doing kind of what indie developers are doing now, right? Like, just a small team kind of plugging away on this thing that they thought was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the credits of some of those old games, and they're not very long. They don't take a long time to scroll through.
For sure.
Yeah, we also had the folks from Basketball Classics. I mentioned it too. In an email, we had them on the NLSC podcast recently, and that's also a two-man crew that actually made that game, and it's really cool. And I thought you would appreciate that as well, just to know that, you know, there's another basketball game on Steam that, you know, only two people made, and I think that was pretty cool.
Oh yeah, when did this come out? I'm actually just looking at a video now. I had not seen this at all.
Oh, Basketball Classics, because it came out earlier. It was, it reached version 1.0 on Steam last January. Remember about this time last year, actually, because we had Josh and Dave on, came back for their second appearance then, because it was in early access before that. I think 2018, I want to say, was the first. Well, that's when I discovered it, I believe.
Yeah, and the games have been received really well, but it's definitely a throwback to the classics. And you know, you talk about games like Jordan versus Bird and Double Dribble and that era of, you know, basketball games, you know, NES and whatnot. And that definitely has that feel, and it has a great soundtrack. Gameplay is fun and reactive and whatnot. They did a great job with it.
Oh, crazy. Yeah, no, I honestly totally miss this, and probably, I mean, the reason why, obviously, is because I was kind of busy. Yeah, like, I was just in the hole finishing my game. Like, I definitely wasn't, like, browsing the web looking for games at that point. It looks cool. Yeah, I just watching a video of it right now. I was like, oh, man, this looks fun. I'll have to check this out.
Andrew, Josh, and David are going to have to pay us a commission, so just don't forget to remind them.
I mean, they put me in the game and gave me a free T-shirt. I think they've repaid me at this point for whatever I deserve for that. No, but it's great. You know, as we said, there's not a lot of the indie games about basketball, and it's filling a niche, filling a space that, and some of us didn't even realize that we wanted some of these games, and yet they have filled that niche. So it's really cool to see, especially when it has been whittled down to just 2K in the sim space, and Jam's been dormant, Saber Interactive came out with a couple of Playgrounds games. We don't know what's going to happen there in the future. But to see some other possible games being made, whether they be licensed or not, has been really cool. So it was definitely cool to see Dunk Lords come through.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, I really felt like, you know, one of the key, I guess, things about, like, design tenets, too, about Dunk Lords was I wanted the player to be kind of in direct control of the character at all times, like kind of Jam or those old arcade games, or fighting games especially, too, where, like, you hit the button and the thing just happens. Because I know, like, with especially, like, the sim games, right, like, you're almost, like, triggering an animation that then kind of, like, has to do its thing, and you're kind of not always directly influencing your character, and I didn't want to have that kind of, those, like, floaty feelings, like, oh, you hit a button, your guy's doing a crossover, but, like, while that's happening, like, you're going to have, like, limited control or something like that.
Yeah,
Because I know, like, yeah, that's the way it is. Yeah, and I know, like, the FIFA games, you know, they have the same deal now, like, and you know, I, like, love, like, Mario Strikers was another game that I played a lot of, like, while I was making Dunk Lords, and, you know, like, I mean, just, it's just night and day compared to, like, how quickly you kind of move and can have control in something like Mario Strikers versus, like, the FIFA games where, you know, they're fun. I'm not, like, that's the thing, is I do see their place and I do enjoy them. But I prefer more arcadey experiences in general. So,
well, I mean, right, they've taken care of that. You know, that's you know, 2K is 2K. So that's why the space is open for other experiences.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of tennis games. I'm sorry for interrupting there. You know, we talk about being dragged in and, like, being forced into an animation. It's kind of what's ruined any new tennis games as well, because you'll literally, the assisted movement, when you hit a button, it drags you all over the court. Like, you don't feel like you're actually going to hit the ball. It's like, right, you hit the button and it drags you to the ball. And I definitely think that that's a case with some of the sim basketball games as well.
It's like I've told you, Derek, you need to get into tennis for the Intellivision. That's where it's at.
I've played that, and it's
an experience,
it's
isn't
interesting.
It?
Yeah. I don't think that's really aged that well, to be honest. But hey, yeah,
it's no Night Stalker. I'll say that much. It's no Night Stalker. Before we get into the mailbag, you know, we talked about the reception, and obviously we, you know, wish you all the success in this, and if we can play any role in spreading the word about the game, we're honored to do that. How has the reception been? I mean, obviously, as Derek said, there's been a lot of positive reviews on Steam. Have you noticed kind of that demographic as far as whether it's been sports fans or basketball fans or the old school 90s fans? Who are you noticing that's kind of getting into the game apart from basketball nerds like us?
You know, like, I feel like the people that are getting into it are people that like basketball games, for better or worse. Like, I kind of is what it is. Like, I kind of had thought that the game would have more of a, like, kind of cross appeal, where if you're like, oh, I like fun multiplayer games like Towerfall or something like that, that you're like, oh, Dunk Lords kind of fits in that mold of, like, a fun 4-player game to play with your friends or fighting game fans. So there definitely has been a group of fighting game fans who found the game and enjoyed it. But I would say it's not like a huge crew. And we actually took the game to Super Smash Con, and it was well received. And actually, Smash players were quite good at Dunk Lords pretty quickly. That was one of the trade shows where the level of play was very high compared to what you usually see at a trade show. And then people that are into sports games, like basketball games, honestly. And I kind of, before we started recording, I was telling this story, but, like, there was multiple times where we were at trade shows and I would kind of hear people would be walking by the booth and they would kind of look over and be like, ooh, a sports game, right? Like with disdain. And it was interesting because when I was kind of promoting the game and taking it around to trade shows and I was in the Indie Mega booth, I was definitely doing the traditional kind of indie game thing because that's kind of who I had met, and that's kind of the pathway that I learned through doing Spelunky. And it seems like that crowd is not the crowd that would maybe be looking for something like Dunk Lords. And so, yeah, I think that's the thing, is the game is still definitely trying to completely find its audience. And I think that, you know, guys like yourself that, like, grew up playing arcade basketball games in the 90s are essentially, like, the core, maybe the core demographic for the game. And then I'm hoping, like, younger fans will like the game, too, because it's just a fun arcade game that you can play with your buddies. 'Cause I know, like, you know, some kid in high school probably has a lot more time and opportunity to play local co-op games or local multiplayer games than, like, someone that works a full-time job with a family. So, you know, I think the game is in a little bit of a strange spot, and I didn't really intend for that to be the case, but, like, you know, fighting games are not, like, the hugest part of gaming, and sports games are certainly large, but they're not, again, they're not, like, the total kind of mainstream other than kind of the big sims. And so, like, kind of crossing them, it maybe created this, like, a smaller Venn diagram than I had planned for.
Well, it's like you said, you know, NBA Jam was enjoyed by a lot of people, whether they were really into basketball or not. I remember playing with my friends, and they were kind of into basketball because, of course, after Michael Jordan came back in 95, there was a big surge in popularity in basketball, especially in Australia. So everyone would kind of get into Jam, and people like myself and my cousin, who were really into basketball, loved it because it was the break, a fun break from the sim games, as much as we love those. But a lot of my friends who had more of a casual interest in basketball loved the pick-up-and-play aspect of it. So I think there's always going to be that, and it's going to be interesting moving forward. And, yeah, hopefully it does get picked up by more people.
I guess I had one more question related before we get to the mailbag. If you could go back and change anything about Dunk Lords, I mean, you worked on it for about 5 years. If you could go back and maybe add a feature or change anything, you know, what would that be? You know, or would it be, like, adding the online component? I know that there's extra costs for that, obviously. Would it be leaderboards and online? What would you change, maybe, about the design and whatnot for the game?
I think I would have not made the game quite so large, because I do feel like... I feel like the game could have started to find its footing earlier on with, like, less characters, and then more characters could have been added. So I don't think I would have necessarily focused on having such a huge cast right at the start. And I also think that, like, the online thing is tough, because, like, of course, I mean, it's our number one requested feature, and of course I would love to have it. But it really would have turned the project into, like, something completely different. I mean, it would have been, like, I would have had to start like a studio and raise money from investors or get a publishing deal. I mean, the whole path, right, changes at that point because it's just not feasible. But, you know, I think the other thing that I would do is kind of probably, like, work with another artist sooner or at least, like, develop kind of like a more finished style earlier on, so I knew where I was headed. So one thing about the game is that I was kind of learning Unity and learning how to do 3D modeling and learning, you know, how to do, like, texture mapping, like, art and stuff, like, all at the same time while I was making the game. And I feel like some of the rough edges on the game are caused by the fact that it was, like, me going through a learning experience. And I don't think it's right to say, like, oh, well, I just would have been a lot better right from the get-go, because that's not really – that's not something I could have done differently. But I do think, like, it would have been better to get, like, someone who already knew how to do all the 3D art, like, maybe right from the get-go to just start, like, blasting it out instead of kind of struggling through multiple iterations. And, I mean, the game – part of the reason why the game took so long, too, was that – you know, I got better as I made the game, and then I had to fix the old stuff to make it look as good as the new stuff. And there was a lot of, like, redone things in the game, especially on the art side. And then when the artist Dan came on board, a lot of it was like, oh, that looks too good compared to this other stuff, and we don't have time to redo that, so you have to make it look worse to make it match that. So I think, like, defining, like, a visual target earlier on that would be easier to stick to would have been, like, a good solution. And then just really kind of, you know, maybe, like, 10 characters or something, which I still feel like would have been, like, essentially a full game experience, right? Like, I do like the fact there's all these characters, but I don't think that, you know, if you cut the roster in half, there would still be plenty to do, especially because there's no other games like this, right? It's not like people are looking at it like, oh, well, this other arcade fighting basketball game has 30 characters, right? There's just nothing to compare it to. So to, like, overshoot the bar so much just created this, like, massive amount of work that I literally added years to the development of the game to make the game so big and full of stuff. And I feel like just getting the core idea out with less things would have been better because it could have been out a lot sooner.
Well, you know, any game that has a shop but no microtransactions is pretty good in our book.
Right. I mean, that's the thing is, like, there is a case to be made for, like, you know, Dunklers would definitely work with a shop where you could buy more characters or whatever, and you play online and, like, rank up. I mean, but that kind of thing is just beyond the scope of, like, one indie developer. So, again, like, will it lead to that someday? Like, I have no idea, right? But, like, certainly I think there's space for something like this, like a character-based, you know, sports arcade game that you can compete in similar to, like, League of Legends or something, right? Like, there's no reason that wouldn't work.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the space is there. It's 2K has the sim market pretty well locked up, and EA is the only other competitor in the space, potentially, at some point, if they come back with it, as we hope they do. But, yeah, it's, like I say, it's, you know, kind of have a monopoly on basketball games where you can upcut people, to be honest.
Yeah.
Any other questions before we get to the mailbag, Derek?
I'm sure I do, but you've definitely done, you know, you've answered most of my questions, and I really appreciate that because, I like I said, I find the game fascinating, and like you said, you know, it's the only game on Steam of its kind. Like, there's no other game like it on Steam, and I do want to thank you for that. You know, my brother and I really enjoyed it, and for those listening, there is definitely, you know, you can put a lot of hours into it. The story mode, like I said, is around 3 or 4 hours long. Then you can play it through again on a higher difficulty. There's characters that you can unlock. All the characters have different abilities. The levels are interesting and stuff like that. So, yeah, I guess, you know, thanks for developing the game and, you know, giving my brother and I a good time. So, appreciate it.
Yeah, awesome. No, I mean, that honestly, the best thing is when I hear that people like the game and just had fun playing it. Right? Like, and honestly, I even like it when people tell me, you know, I played it and I didn't like this part of the game. That's good, too, honestly. Because it's like, just as, you know, you spend half a decade of your life on something, just to have people, like, take the time to look at it and check it out is awesome. I mean, it just feels great. So, yeah. I mean, like, I know people aren't going to necessarily love everything about it, but I also think there is a whole lot to love. So, yeah.
No, absolutely.
So we do have a few questions for you, Andy. Special questions for the mailbag this week. First one comes from our good friend Rock, Jeff Cortinas on Twitter. What was the hardest piece of code you had to do for the game? What was the hardest part to code, perhaps?
So going into it, I thought that the AI was going to be, like, really hard. But it ended up not being as bad as I thought. It actually ended up being, like, pretty reasonable. I mean, the hardest, like, individual thing that I had to program in the game, you know, it might have been, there was quite a bit of, trouble with the alley-oops, actually. So, this problem kind of rolls back into passing too, right? Because if you're passing the ball to someone in an arcade basketball game, you can't just, like, say, oh, there's where they are, throw the ball to that point, because they will 100% not be standing there by the time the ball gets there, because everyone's running around as fast as, like, a race car, basically. And so the game has code to, like, kind of, like, adjust the ball as it's being passed so that it, like, makes it to the target. And then, like, the dunk code, right, like, I have to calculate the arc for, like, jumping to do the dunk and, like, make sure you're going to line up with the hoop. But then the alley-oop code was just tricky because it's like, okay, well, I have to throw the pass. The other guy has to start the dunk during the pass, and the ball has to make sure that it gets to him in the air while he's jumping in an arc that will also collide with the hoop correctly. So that was not simple. And there's some fudge work going in there, but that was getting that to all line up correctly was not easy to get my head around or to get the code working correctly.
Those are the things that we don't think about as gamers who have little experience in software development. I did actually do a semester of software development in year 11 of high school. I think I've told the story before. I made a what turned out to be, it was supposed to be in Java, a scrolling shooting gallery, but it was actually more of a scrolling picture gallery because the shooting mechanic didn't work. Still got marks for the concept, but yeah, it was a, nice. A shooting gallery where you can't actually shoot. And of course, the, you know, the classic introduction to software design, the random number generator in Visual Basic, that kind of thing. But yeah, it's when you actually try to do a bit of programming like that, you really do appreciate it, especially getting insight like that. It's something, you know, we don't think about, just, you know, calculating the arcs and the positions of characters. We just, yeah, it's one of those things I think of, sometimes we take for granted.
For sure. I mean, because the thing is, like, in doing it in real life is easy, right? You're just like, oh, I just toss the ball and it does the thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's the simplest of things. But and I just thought of the other thing that was actually a huge struggle in the beginning of the project, which took a ton of time, and it was a blend of kind of my inexperience in 3D plus it's just not the easiest problem to solve, also was getting the equipment to fit on all the different characters. So the characters in the game, they all use the same rig, but we do like tricks kind of while the game is animating to like change their proportions. So like even though the actual skeleton that they're using is like, you know, basically matches Slice, the main character, the base skeleton looks like his proportions, but like there's characters that have like shorter legs or longer waists or broader shoulders or narrower shoulders. And so I had to write code to like adjust the skeletons from all that. And then also, like, when you buy all the equipment in the game, like the gloves, the shoes, the armor, it all actually visually shows up on the characters. And I did not want to have to make, like, you know, say I made like the magnet armor, like I did not want to have to make like 20 versions of the magnet armor for one for each character mesh. So I had to build a system for taking kind of like a generic magnet armor and then reading kind of markers off of the character skeleton to like make it fit on that character correctly. And so that was like a huge challenge to figure out how to make good looking equipment that could be attached to like any shape character. So like this huge bear can wear the same thing as like the skinniest guy in the game.
Yeah, that's a lot of work. Again, that, you know, I guess we don't think about that stuff, Derek. You know, when we're critiquing games, we don't think of it all the hard work.
I think about that sometimes. Like my brother and I were playing, and you know how the characters, you know, when they get fully powered up, they get bigger and whatnot,
yeah.
And we were, you know, I think about that and about the coding related to that, because I did recently just start trying to get into Unity and just messing around with it. I guess one of my other questions, too, because we're talking about coding, and I think Rock, the person who asked this question, I think he may use Unity. I'm not 100% sure. I know that he's part of Chimera Gaming, so he's part of an indie developer and whatnot. Why did you choose Unity, and did you think about using Unreal Engine or approaching something like Godot or anything like that?
Well, so when I started Dunk Lords, Unreal was briefly considered, but like they did not have, Unreal at that time was just still C++, I think. And it also didn't have all the, like, editors. There was no, like, indie license. Like, it was not, like, a super appealing choice for an indie developer back when I started. They've done a lot to kind of make themselves more like Unity, essentially. And that was not the case back then. Godot, I don't even think was around, or if it was, I still have only just been recently hearing about that. Like, I did not, it certainly was not on my radar, if it even existed back then. I mean, my options for making a 3D game were pretty limited, unless I wanted to write my own 3D engine, which, again, like, you know, I'd done some 3D, like, programming stuff in college, so I could have maybe attempted it, but it wasn't something that would have been, I mean, it would have made it way harder, and I felt like I knew that making a 3D game was going to be a challenge, because there was a lot for me to learn moving to that, and I tried to make it easy on myself. By using Unity. C-sharp also does something called garbage collection, which, I mean, it basically just means that you don't have to keep track of all the memory you're using, and it'll automatically clear that memory for you, whereas in C++, you have to manually kind of manage all that. And we had, you know, that's just a cause of a lot of bugs sometimes. So that sounded good. And honestly, like, yeah, it just seemed like an easy way to kind of get into 3D programming and to try to make something. And I mean, that's also partly why I picked Dunk Lords to make, was I was like, oh, it's a box with a ball and four characters, like, that's it, right? Yeah, there's art and all this other stuff going on, but like, at the base, right, there's just four characters, a ball, and you're in a very limited environment. You're not like exploring an open world. Like, there's a smallness to it that made me feel like, okay, like, this is a good space to, like, learn 3D. It's like making this little simulation inside a basketball court, which turned out to be both true and false, right? But that's basically why I picked Unity. It seemed like the only viable way to do a 3D game for me as a single developer. And, you know, I'm glad I learned it. And I think moving forward, like, I'm still going to use Unity. I'll probably look a little bit into Unreal Engine, but in general, I feel pretty comfortable in Unity now. And, you know, it's like I know how to do all this stuff. So I'm hopeful that if I make another game, it'll go quicker this time.
Yeah, sometimes limited options are just better. For me, you know, recently just trying to pick it up and whatnot, I was watching tutorials on Godot and Unreal and Unity and all of that stuff, and I'm like, which one do I choose? So, limited options are sometimes better, so I'm sure that made, at least you had an easy choice. That's good.
So the second question kind of actually leads on from that. This is from Stildo33 in the forum, at OneKidneyKenny on Twitter, asks, if you make a second edition, let's say a tournament edition for Dunk Lords, what would you add or take away? And if you develop a new game, what would you like to do as far as whether a new genre or branching out or something similar?
Yeah, so I think the only thing that would make sense for, like, base Dunk Lords is to do, like, Dunk Lords Online Edition, right? Like, I mean, I do think that that would make sense, and that's more a matter of, like, I've never done online programming. I've never done multiplayer programming. I mean, I did, like, one small project with it in college, but, like, I'm not familiar with it enough to do it. and so I think that would make a lot of sense if people like the game, is to bring it online at some point. But again, like, that would have to be some other situation would have to occur for that to be possible. But I think, if the game was warrants it, like, you know, we did have multiple downloadable, like, DLC characters planned. There are actually, like, three or four designs for characters that aren't in the game that are, like, you know, concepted out. In some cases, there's some models done for them. But nothing, they've never been in the game or programmed or anything like that. So it'd be cool to, like, be able to add more characters. But again, like, I'm not going to do it unless it seems like the game is picking up some popularity, and it seems like people are really, like, wanting it, you know what I mean? I think there it would be fun someday to come back and do a sequel. I know, like, I mean, that the end of the, there's a little bit of a teaser kind of thing at the end, so where it's like, oh, you could kind of see how the story could keep going. I don't want to kind of spoil anything, but, you know, it was purposely left open. There's a thread hanging that could turn into something for the next game. So certainly it's been on my mind, and it's just a matter of, you know, one, at this point, like, I kind of want to work on something different. I mean, you spend years just, like, researching and looking at basketball stuff. Honestly, like, I have a hard time right now even watching basketball on TV, because it's almost like I get flashbacks. Because, I mean, the development was really long and hard, and, you know, I think you get a little bit, you get a little bit of that sense of, like, I just want to step away for a bit. And this happened with Spelunky, too, where I was like, oh, geez, I, like, do not want to open this project anymore. I don't want to look at it. But then, you know, a couple years go by, and you're like, oh, I really miss working on that. I really want to go play it again. I really want to see what I did. So I think it's pretty natural to have this kind of, like, push, like, force kind of pushing you away from it when you first finish. And then kind of we'll see how it goes. But, yeah, I mean, right now, you know, I'm working on figuring something out for Switch, and I'm definitely kind of experimenting with next projects. And I will say, like, it at least the first thing I do will not be like Dunk Lords 2 or related to Dunk Lords. But that, I'm not ruling that out either going forward. It's just one of those things where it's like, you know, it would also be good to kind of take a step away. You know, after more time passes, I'll probably have more ideas for things I didn't do in Dunk Lords, right? But I still am at the point now where I feel like every possible basketball thing I could think of, I put in the game. And so, like, if I started on a sequel, it was like, what do I even do? Like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, it feels like I kind of tapped that creative well, and it's best to drill another well while that one fills back up.
If you had the opportunity to make a licensed game in the same style, a crazy over the top and with a storyline and everything, if the NBA approached you to do that, is that something you would consider?
Sure. Yeah. Like, if
hypothetically,
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, certainly that would be an exciting thing to work on. It's funny because I think part of me would sad that I wasn't working on my own characters, like, right, because there is, like, a ownership of Dunk Lords. Like, I made all the characters, I made all the world, I, like,
of course, yeah.
You know, and working on somebody else's thing, like, it would be hard to turn down, mostly because I know that the gameplay would get exposure that it wouldn't get for Dunk Lords, right? So, like, there's people that are never going to play Dunk Lords that, if, you know, an NBA licensed version of Dunk Lords came out, would buy in a second, right? And so, like, it's more like, the reason I would jump on the opportunity is so that the gameplay ideas that I have could, like, be seen by more people. And, you know, like, obviously, like, if Nintendo was like, hey, you want to make, like, Mario Dunkers or something, right, it would be like, of course I want to I want to make Mario Dunkers. So, like, I don't even think it's limited to just, like, NBA. Like, I think, like, any kind of crazy license with all their characters, like, in Dunk Lords would be cool. But, like, I don't know how likely that is. But, I mean, it has happened, right? Like, the Crypt of the NecroDancer team got asked to make the Cadence of Hyrule game or whatever it is, right? Mm. So, I mean, there's some, at least one precedence of something like this happening, but yeah, I mean, like, that's the thing, is it's like, of course it would be great to be able to, like, have more money too, to, like, just, you know, make the game better, make the art really great, like, polish it up, add online, and, like, with a giant license would come all of those resources. So I would definitely want to do it, but I guess what I'm saying is it wouldn't be all upside. Right. Mm. The downside would be like, oh, now I'm restricted to this, you know, property or this license that I don't that even if I like, I don't necessarily get to make whatever I want, right? There'll be limits that I don't put there myself.
I mean, of course you do. I'm curious. You get Nintendo characters, you know, Mario, obviously, the special ability is the mushroom. Link, of course, would have a wonderful hook shot. Yes, that's a terrible pun. But yeah, obviously, you could do a lot of stuff with, again, Nintendo characters. So yeah, that's pipe dream stuff, I suppose, but just... I think it'd be cool if it ever happened, or if you got on the Switch, if Nintendo said, hey, you know, can you put a Mario or a Link or a Samus in there or something? It'd be kind of cool. Very cool, in fact.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And I do think, too, like, I mean, that's the thing, is, like, they... I would not be shocked if, like, other arcade basketball games start doing some of the stuff that Dunk Lords is doing later on. Like, even though the game isn't, like, a mega hit, like, I do feel like people who are really into basketball games or making basketball games are probably playing it. And I think, like, it's kind of broadening kind of the possibility space of what people are considering putting in their basketball games. So I would not be surprised if certain things start showing up in other games. But I don't know if that's true. I have no, like, insider information. I just have a feeling that, like, you know, like, in the same way that, like, you know, NBA Jam kind of showed people that, like, kind of crazy sports games would be really fun, like, people might look at Dunk Lords and be like, hey, we can go even crazier.
Sure, yeah.
Well, I'm curious, have you played NBA Playgrounds or NBA 2K Playgrounds, or have you looked into those games?
I've looked into them and played them, like, a little bit, and I know... I haven't played a ton of them because, again, like I was so deep in development, like, I wasn't, like, spending a lot of time playing anything. But I did see that they're, like, adding, they had, like, more, the second one at least had, like, more power-ups and kind of, like, status effects and stuff, like, that seemed like they were, like, adding in there.
Yeah, I was curious of your, I know you spent limited time with it, but I was curious of, you know, what you thought of those games, how they held up, and I guess kind of the state of arcade basketball games like that today.
Yeah, I mean, so, like, my initial kind of, I mean, my impression of those games, and again, I haven't spent, like, a vast amount of time on them, but my impression of them is that they aren't, that they're playing it very safe, right? They're kind of doing the thing, but just enough to be saying they're doing the thing, and they're not really trying to do new stuff, or, and they're also, I mean, they kind of look like they have that, I don't know how to say this, I guess it's like a mobile game look, like, they have this kind of very safe, like, art direction, and very safe, like, gameplay decisions. It just seems very safe, like, that they're just like, hey, we're gonna make this thing and we're gonna do it kind of by the book. And so I think they're, I mean, from what I play, they're, like, competent games. Like, they're fine, they're good, like, they're not bad games, but they're also not trying to impress you, if that makes sense, like, right? Like, they're not, they're just, it feels like, yeah, like they're not trying to go, like, over the top or wow you in any category, really.
I feel a lot of people feel that way. I think that seems to be a consensus.
We couldn't really agree more with that, to be honest. We've talked about these games quite a bit, and they are really fun co-op, but even with the pace, they played it safe. Like, the pace of the players, like the pace of the action and all of that stuff. It was in that way.
Slow. Yeah. But I mean, the thing is like, this is not unique to just basketball. I mean, I would say most games that come out are in that kind of safe space. I mean, the things that break out are the things that are trying something different, and that different thing works really well, right? So it's like, it's not even, I mean, because you could do something different that's just horrible. That's actually really easy to do. the hard thing is finding something actually better and wildly different. Which is kind of, like, what I was trying to do. And again, like, I'm realistic about what I achieved, right? Like, I don't think I'm, like, revolutionizing the whole genre or something. I don't, like, but I feel like, I feel like hope when people play the game that they see that Dunk Lords was trying to be something more. Like, that there was some attempt to do something that people hadn't seen before.
You know, I do think a lot of companies play it safe. We've talked about this before, actually. One of the reasons why EA Sports Big went under and they stopped making NBA Street, it became less about the creative projects and the artistic nature of game design and creating these different projects, and more to that, what can we pump out every year? And a lot of companies have gone that way, and it's really kind of fallen to indie games to fill that gap, I think, once again, of the creativity and trying something different.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, the thing is, that is true, but I think the thing to remember, I guess, about that is that, like, the way they are operating makes more money, right? Mm. Like, they're able to put out more games.
Granted, yeah.
Quicker, and also, like, they're essentially, right, the indie game space is, like, testing these ideas for bigger games, right? Like, it's like, you know, there's all these people testing out, like, hey, does this work? Does this work? And then when one of those indie games finds something and becomes a hit, then you'll see, like the Battle Royale games, right? Like, I mean, so the first ones of those were very small teams that were making them, or they were pretty underground projects. But as soon as one of them shows, like, hey, this thing is real good, this is a core thing that we can keep making, then all the big companies start making, like, larger, better versions of that core concept, right? And so, you know, because that's the way to safely make money. Like, if I was investing in a company, I might not want them to do the crazy new thing, but like, if you, you know, as a player, you obviously, you know, you'll play the other stuff, but you want to find those gems too. So, I mean, that's the thing. I'm not against it. Like, I actually think it makes a lot of sense, and like, a lot can be done within those frameworks. That's really cool. And you know, artists can make games look amazing, even if the gameplay is something you've seen before, and make something really great. So it's not like an either or thing, but yeah, it's just something where like indies tend to like, and I'm speaking for myself here too. Like, we just love what we're working on, and we want to make it cool. And we're honestly making kind of irresponsible decisions to bring them to reality. Right? Like,
yeah, but you can see the love in those games. Like, I play a game like Unreal Heroes. I don't know if you checked that one out. Just with the art direction and, you know, the gameplay and whatnot and the scenery and the levels and all of that stuff. You play these games and you can see the love that's put into it. And I think that's what makes those games special and unique. And like you said, I think the downfall of that is, of course, you know, with a small development team and whatnot, and you don't have the same marketing or same marketing budget, you don't get to make as much money. But like I said, what makes those games special, though, is that you can see the love that's kind of put into it.
For sure, yeah. And I mean, and that's why, honestly, like, that's why I'm making indie games, is so that I can get my ideas out of my head directly, right? Like, and the things I make are things that I want to make. And so, you know, that's the nature of it. Like, that's just how it goes.
So, last question, and a quick question to end on, might give you a bit of a chuckle. Once again, from Sticky Fingers, member of our forum, and on Twitter, Sticky Fingers FR. Any chance there'll be, and you mentioned there's the possibility of DLC characters, depending on how the game does. Any chance you could include any of Spelunky characters in Dunk Lords?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, probably. Like, I'm real good friends with Derek Yu, the creator of Spelunky, still. I mean, we keep in touch, and actually, initially, like, this is at the very beginning of the project, there was a plan to have some Spelunk, like, I think two Spelunky characters, like, hidden in the game. And it just, you know, it basically didn't make sense to make them by the time I was getting closer with the game. I mean, that's the thing, the game's cast ballooned to 20 without them, or to 19 without them. And so it felt like it didn't really make sense. But, I mean, it's certainly something I could ask Derek about, and I'm pretty sure he'd be down for it. I don't want to speak for him, but, like, yeah, he seemed enthusiastic about the idea before and seemed like it'd be pretty fun. But again, like, I don't hold your breath for this or anything, but it's certainly something that could potentially happen at some point.
There you go, Sticky. It's out there. The idea is out, definitely out there. But, yeah, I mean, once again, thank you so much for coming on the show, Andy, and giving us this insight into Dunk Lords. We do hope that it continues to go from strength to strength. Please do remember us when you, if you get on board with 2K and make Dunk Lords 2K, that, you know, please remember the little guys like us. Of course, once again, it is available on Steam. It is available on Xbox Live. Anything else you'd like to plug or to say before we wrap up here?
No, I mean, I don't think so. I mean, I think, I mean, obviously, like, I would love if people check out Dunk Lords. Like, I think it's a really fun game. I think especially once COVID ends and people have the chance to play with their friends in person, it's just a really fun couch co-op game. It's a really fun couch multiplayer game. You know, I basically had all these fond memories growing up of going to, like, friends' houses and staying up all night playing, like, Street Fighter and NBA Jam. And I was like, hey, what if those were just the same game and you could just play that all the time? And so, you know, I just hope people find it and hope people have fun with it. And, yeah, that's all I can ask.
Well, I think that resonates with us, doesn't it, Derek?
No, absolutely. And like I said, I think the game is easily best played co-op. And I encourage people to either, you know, try the Steam Play option or, you know, do local co-op, because I still think local co-op is king. There's no better experience than local co-op. And maybe that's because of, you know, when I grew up and whatnot, but I'm not for, you know, like traditional online gaming or anything like that. So I definitely think those of you who want a great co-op experience and to be able to go through a story mode together and use so many different characters and play on all these different courts and stuff, I definitely think it's worth picking it up.
And as somebody who has played online a lot in the last few years on the virtual hardware, the virtual blacktop, couch co-op is definitely superior. I'm just going to throw that out there. Less 15-year-old kids throwing around slurs, if nothing else. That has brought us to the end of episode number 357 of the NLC podcast, our interview with Andy Hull, the co-creator of Dunk Lords there. And once again, Andy, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much. Yeah, this was a blast.
So the show comes out every Sunday on the NLSC, of course, which is nb-live.com. We're also on all your favorite podcatching apps and platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podcast Addict. Search for NLC Podcast, look for our logo, and that will be us. Please feel free to leave us a review on the Apple Podcasts store. It always helps with our ego and, of course, visibility. And before we wrap up, Derek, where can we find you? Anything else to plug this week?
No, absolutely. You can find me on Twitter at D4384, over on the NLSC D43, on YouTube as well. I got to get a Dunk Lords gameplay video up soon, and I'm on D43 on YouTube, and then obviously tune in to Holding Court with D43, my podcast, to talk real hoop.
Where sometimes I guest star and we angrily rip on the current game. Actually, no, we don't. We do pretty good commentary, I like to think. But definitely check out Derek on those platforms. And, of course, stay tuned for the content we both do on the NLSC. Of course, I am Andrew in the forum, as I said. Andrew NLSC on Twitter. The NLSC is the NLSC on Facebook and Twitter. On Instagram, we are NLSC Basketball. YouTube is NBA Live Series Center. And, of course, keep it locked to the NLSC itself, nba-live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games. But, yes, that's all for this week. So thank you for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Derek.
Oh, I'm Andy, but I won't be here next week.
Go get buckets, everyone.